there was a new member on the Democrat side of the aisle, and she said to her seatmate one day after a vote, she said, "I thought you and Noreen were friends." And she said, "Well, we are." She said, "Well, she just voted no on your bill." And she laughed and she said, "Yeah, she's probably going to vote 99% against my bill, but it doesn't change the fact that we're friends." And I think that if you can get into a mindset where you're going to disagree with colleagues on the other side of the aisle and sometimes on your side of the aisle. But when you disagree, please do it respectfully, because everyone deserves that. And I think I've been able to take that attitude in most situations.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK Quad Cities NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and it's primary election time in Illinois. Iowa's primary will be later in June, and we'll focus on some races there. But I wanted to take a couple races of interest to folks in our listening area and introduce the candidates running. And we're going to start that off today. My first guest is State Representative Doreen Hammond, who represents the 94th House District. It's a differently shaped district. I'm going to have her describe it here in a little bit, but it does come up into our listening area. And Noreen has served in the House since 2010, and it's a pleasure to have her on the show. Noreen, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Robin. Always a pleasure.
Well, first, talk about the district a little bit. This is your first time on the show, and I want to familiarize our listeners a little bit with the district before we get into your background a little bit. But I didn't realize this is a really big and covers a lot of ground.
It does. Geographically, it is the largest House district in the state of Illinois. It covers all or part of 13 counties, starting in Andalusia in Rock Island County at the northwest tip, coming into Mercer County, Henderson County, Hancock County, and the upper third of Adams County. So it comes across from the Mississippi all the way across to the Illinois River. Takes in Fulton, Mason, a little bit of Peoria, a little bit of Tazewell, parts of Warren, parts of Schuyler, parts of Knox. So it's a very, very large district, a little over 175 zip codes, Robin, just to put it in perspective.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I will say, and my listeners know this, that I am not a fan of gerrymandering by either party, and this is a badly gerrymandered district. And but that's a topic for another day. We really need to get rid of gerrymandering. But anyway, thank you for the description of the district. Tell us, share a little bit about your background. I said you started in 2010, some of your background before you served, and then some of your main areas of interest in the House.
Sure. So my husband and I, Leonard, we've been married for 47 years. God bless him. We have a daughter, Trish. She lives in Chicago, and it's interesting because I grew up in the suburbs. I was born in Berwyn, grew up in the suburbs, and moved to Macomb to go to school at Western. And our daughter has done about the exact opposite. So she loves the city, and God bless her for it. I worked as a legislative aide before I became a legislator for Representative Rich Myers for about 14 years, and a great mentor to me, great teacher. And during that time, I also served on the Emmett Township Board. I was a supervisor, and by law, you can serve in both positions. And I quickly learned maybe you can, but you shouldn't. And so I resigned from that position, and in 2010 was appointed. There was about six candidates that interviewed for Rich's position after he passed away suddenly, and I was ultimately chosen, and have been fortunate enough to serve since December of 2010. 2023, I was honored to be named Deputy Republican Leader and the House Budget Negotiator. So that's a challenge that we face now.
I know, and I'll share with our listeners that I follow Representative Hammond on social media. I follow quite a few of our legislators just to kind of see what they do, how they keep in touch. Your district is so big, it would be hard to really get out and knock a lot of doors. I know you do, but I do know you're around a lot. The reason I set this question up is what are people talking about right now when you see them? What are some of the main things they're expressing to you, that issues that they're concerned about?
Sure. I will tell you that a vast majority of the folks that I speak with on a regular basis are very concerned about their property taxes. They're very concerned about their utility costs. And they're concerned about their healthcare costs and how is it we have dollars for paying for healthcare for those that are not Illinois residents when we need the help. And so those are some of the main focuses of what I'm hearing from folks. And frankly, all of their concerns are very valid.
Yeah, that kind of matches up what I hear when I go out and talk to people is I would just add insurance costs to the list you had. But there's gas prices have come down a little bit. Food prices are still a problem. But the ones you talked about, I would say especially utility costs I hear a lot about. So I want to also set up some of our discussion about specific issues. It can be hard for a Republican in Illinois. I'm old enough to remember when Republicans controlled one or both houses in the legislature and even had the governor's office for a number of years back in the 80s and 90s. Believe it or not, for some listeners, but it's been a strongly Democratic state for a number of years now. How difficult is that is for you as a leader? You've got things you want to get done, but I know you do get some things accomplished, but how is it that you can do that while being in the minority?
And when I first came into office, Robin, the numbers were much different. There were 62 Democrats in the House and 56 Republicans. We had great relationships across the aisle because we, quite frankly, had to work together with those numbers. Now the numbers are quite different. There are 78 Democrats and 40 Republicans. Fortunately, I can do math because it requires 60 votes to get anything passed in the General Assembly. I have been very fortunate over the years because I have been able to forge relationships with colleagues on the other side of the aisle that are interested in what's it like in rural Illinois and what kind of challenges do you face? And on the other side of it, I'm interested in what their challenges are and, you know, how we can work together to maybe come up with something that's helpful for both areas and all sides of the state. So a lot of that requires education. You know, I have to explain to folks when they talk about food deserts and I say, well, we have food deserts. They may not mirror what yours are, but, you know, a town with a Casey's and a Dollar General, that's the gas station, the restaurant, and the grocery store. So, but when you open up and you talk to folks about this, they quite frankly are very interested and they have no idea. So you have to learn to forge those relationships and be true to your word.
I'm curious with the state of our politics these days, especially on the federal level, It's just so hard anymore, to especially with how personal a lot of attacks are on social media, etc. But with all that going on, why run again? And I ask that of all candidates. I'm just curious why they seek to go try to participate in our government again. In light, I know there's a lot of good things going on, but running for office is harder these days.
It is. It's interesting. There was a new member on the Democrat side of the aisle, and she said to her seatmate one day after a vote, she said, "I thought you and Noreen were friends." And she said, "Well, we are." She said, "Well, she just voted no on your bill." And she laughed and she said, "Yeah, she's probably going to vote 99% against my bill, but it doesn't change the fact that we're friends." And I think that if you can get into a mindset where you're going to disagree with colleagues on the other side of the aisle and sometimes on your side of the aisle. But when you disagree, please do it respectfully, because everyone deserves that. And I think I've been able to take that attitude in most situations. I've also said, if you're going to serve, you need to have two things. You need to have it in your heart, and you have to have something to bring to the table. And when one is missing, stay home. I feel like it's definitely in my heart, and I feel like I have something to bring to the table. You know, this is a time where folks can stand in judgment, but until you know, what are the court-ordered costs in a budget? What are the mandated categoricals in a budget? What are the ins and outs of why our energy costs are what they are? What are we doing in Medicaid, and how can we balance that and get a better bang for our buck against the federal costs? You know, these are things that you don't learn overnight. And I think that having that knowledge and being able to sit at a table and work some of this stuff out is important.
Listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is State Representative Noreen Hammond from Illinois' 94th District. She's a Republican who first was appointed to the seat in 2010. This district, as she has explained, covers 13 counties, kind of U-shaped here in West Central Illinois, and extends up into Mercer and Rock Island counties, Warren counties in our listening area. So we've been talking a little bit about her background, why she's chosen to run again, and some of the skills you need as a minority member in a legislature to try to get things done. Before we get to some specific issues, I'm curious, you've served for a while. What are some specific accomplishments that you've done that you're most proud of that you want to take to voters this election?
I think a lot of it has been around funding for our universities and our community colleges. We're seeing a challenge again in the last couple of years, but we've been able to do some things through a higher ed working group, such as the Aim High program, that adds that last dollar to students when they need that, and it makes the decision on whether they're going to go to school in Illinois or are they going to go across the border to somewhere else. So I think, you know, that's been incredibly important. And I am a very, very strong advocate for seniors and those in long-term care and the disabled, the more vulnerable populations, because oftentimes they don't have a voice to speak for them. And I'm happy to be that voice, and I am an absolute champion for those folks. I was part of the sponsorship for the prescription drug affordability to lower the prescription costs. Worked on with my colleagues on both sides of the aisles to do some things that we are hoping will address the teacher shortage and keep some of our Illinois students here in Illinois. And I think probably one of my biggest accomplishments that I'm most proud of, I had a constituent whose wife had brain cancer, and their physician told them that the last available treatment that was appropriate for her condition was proton beam therapy. And their insurance company said, no, we're not going to pay for that. And it took me 3.5 years, and they understood that it wasn't going to help their family, but it would help others going forward. And working with the insurance companies and other groups, I was able to get legislation passed that states specifically when medically approved, then they will cover proton beam therapy. And so that's been huge for a lot of folks, particular pediatrics. There's a lot of pediatric patients that need this kind of therapy. So very, very gratifying.
We talked a little earlier in the interview about what you're hearing around the district and a lot of the issues you're hearing, not surprisingly, around the topic of affordability. We're seeing this nationally as well. What as you've heard this, Noreen, what's going in your mind that if you're elected again, we're going to sit down and here's what we're going to try to do to address these issues? Some of the affordability is more maybe easier addressed at the federal level, but some of these, the state can make a little bit of a difference.
Well, I think they can, and particularly, I'm concerned that Illinois did not take advantage of a lot of the tax incentives that were passed at the federal level. Instead, we decoupled from them, and that puts more money in the general revenue fund in Illinois, but that money actually comes from our taxpayers, and so. That's a real concern. And you and I talked about the utility bills that are literally skyrocketing, and it is a direct result of the energy policies that have been put in place in the state of Illinois. And other states have put policies in place, but they had an integrated energy policy when they did it. So they knew if we're going to move this here down below, then we have to bump something else up. But Illinois just said, okay, we're going to shut down coal, we're going to shut down all of these plants, and we're going to hope for the best. Well, the best didn't happen. It didn't become a reality. And so now we have the markets like MISO and PJM that are looking at Illinois and saying, well, you don't have a plan. And we're going to stick it to you for what you're going to pay for energy. And those pass-throughs through our utility companies, be it Ameren or ComEd, they're passing through what those markets are costing us. And that's not going to go away anytime soon. And so we need to get very serious about, are we realistic on closing all these coal plants? I don't know that we can get them reopened again, but we sure as heck need to pay attention to what we're doing with natural gas and nuclear, because nuclear is a great option for us, a great option for us. So the more we can look at that, and instead of what it, j just recently the governor penned, I think it was Senate Bill 25 that puts in all this battery storage and less reliable energy. And quite frankly, we're going to see higher rates because of that, because it's about an $8 billion cost over 10 years. So that's another situation that we have to deal with. We talked about property taxes. We did an incentive for an exemption for seniors that raises their exemption to $75,000 in income this year, and goes up $1,000 incrementally through $78,000. So it's an exemption. It's not a money in their pocket, but it's helpful for seniors. We need to look at doing more of that for other populations and other groups to see how we can possibly, you know, it's terrible when you hear from these folks and they've lived in their homes for 30 plus years and they're paying exorbitant property taxes. You know, how about we set a thing where that says if you've lived in your house for X number of years, you've paid taxes on it for all this time, now you're done. Are we going to create some holes other places? Yes, we are. We're going to have to deal with that. But if we can bring more people into the state of Illinois or keep more people in the state of Illinois, it would be helpful.
I have to ask this, and I don't like to editorialize on this show much, but on this issue, I feel like I have to, because it seems like, and this is about the downstate road funding that I had a reporter on who just twisted himself in knots trying to deny that the legislation passed, took money from the road downstate road fund. And he finally did admit it. But I don't know why people are trying to hide that or whatever. And this kind of angers me, because again, we need money for roads downstate. But anyway, I don't want to take away from your opportunity to talk about this.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, when we passed the Safe Roads Amendment several years ago and said road dollars will stay in a lockbox and you can't get your hands on them, we had to do that because they were constantly transferring road funds to general revenue fund, whatever their whim was of the day. And so we put them in a lockbox. And it was okay for the first year or two. Then all of a sudden, my colleagues in administration started saying, you know, we could consider this a road cost, a road fund cost. And we could consider, well, salaries are surely a road fund cost if they're associated with transportation. And then most recently, we had the mass transit in the city of Chicago and some of the suburbs that were in a fiscal cliff of $200 million. Well, up comes Senate Bill 2111, I think it was. I don't know how I could ever not forget it, not remember it. But we have traditionally always had a split between downstate received 55% of the transportation funding. Chicago, 45%. It was that way because we have the larger share of the roads. Granted, they have the population, but we have the largest share of the roads. And so with this latest mass transit bailout that they call the Northern Illinois Transit District, that's all flipped. And so 85% of that $500 million is the sweep, $500 million in our from our fund, and 85% goes to Chicago and 15% comes to downstate. So, I mean, I don't know how you deny that. It is an absolute reality. And the incredible part of it is, all total, it's a $1.5 billion in tax increase. And then it's $1 billion in higher costs at the tollway, which is in exchange for some jobs on the tollway. Well, so it's a $2.5 billion fix for what was a $200 million fiscal cliff. That's not good math. That's not good budgeting. And yes, Illinois downstate did lose big time.
Yeah. There's nothing illegal about that, I guess, although it sure doesn't look good. When again, we passed this amendment supposedly locking these funds off, but it's kind of a segue to my next question. I mean, our reputation, and you've seen this, Noreen, and our, you know, over the last 30 years in government, reputation in Illinois has really taken a beating because of corruption. And this, you know, it's both parties to some degree. We've got the former Speaker of the House, Democratic Party chairman, sentenced to go to jail and corruption. I believe there's a state senator facing trial. It just seems like we get these all the time. What I know you've been involved in this, but what are some things we can do in ethics reform legislation to try to clean this up a little bit?
Well, the very first thing we need to do is find a way to convince our colleagues on the other side of the aisle that we have to do something. Because, you know, myself and my colleagues will introduce bills, and they never see the light of day. They never get out of Rules Committee. But we have seen, and I have served as a member of the Legislative Ethics Commission. I've been in those meetings, in those discussions. Not that I can share any of that, and I wouldn't, but the fact is, legislative inspector generals have offered suggestions on what could be done. And we have not acted on any of that, quite frankly, none of those suggestions. One is to end the use of campaign funds in corruption defense. That's pretty much a no-brainer. Stop the revolving door of going from a legislator to a lobbyist. Another no-brainer. The most important one, and I cannot imagine why my colleagues will not agree to this, and that is to give our legislative inspector general the power to issue subpoenas without coming to the members of the Legislative Ethics Commission, who are legislators, for their approval. That legislative inspector general should have complete autonomy on that subpoena issue. We've got to wrap our hands around this because, quite frankly, when you talk to folks and they say, oh, where are you from? You say Illinois and they go, oh, how many governors and legislators are serving time? It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
I had people from New Jersey tell me that, and I'm like, wow, I thought that New Jersey was the worst. But, we have only time just for maybe a minute here. I like to give candidates for office a time, a summation, a closing argument. In 60 seconds, Noreen, share with the voters why they should return you to the Illinois House.
Well, as I said earlier, I have it in my heart, and I've got something to bring to the table. I think that I have done a good job representing the constituency that I have over the years. I have an incredible record for constituent services with my folks, and I want to continue that. And I'm hopeful that voters will choose to have me continue and cast their vote for me, and on St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's, March 17th, Tuesday, yes. March 17th. Yep. Coming up very quickly here. State Representative Noreen Hammond, representing the 94th Legislative District in Illinois, has been my guest today on Heartland Politics. Noreen, thank you so much for taking the time.
Robin, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to spend time with you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.